Major Sapping's Reel 5.
As I say, I met a doctor there who I knew in Burma, a chap called Dudley Stone, Captain Dudley Stone. And I told him what my problem was, and he said, yes, your toe looks a bit septic. So he cleaned it out, gave me some fresh bandages. There was very little he could give me in the way of antiseptics. Now, we were using saffron, or turmeric, as you term it now, as a very good antiseptic in washing wounds and things like that. And so I got a load of this stuff. And I then spent a couple of days, and you know, I just couldn't stay in that seat yet. That little break gave me a little bit of, you know, feeling better, because I had to get up, whether I liked it or not, and leave these beautiful troops along, you see. But as I was on my own with my girl on there, and four of my men stayed behind, we then got on the road and we carried on. I only met them up till we got to Dimapur, to Imphal, that's right. I think Imphal came, no, we got to Kohima first. I think it's Kohima, then Imphal, I forget my geography now. And when I got to Imphal, I met up with quite a lot of the chaps. None of two brigade. They seem to have gone through somehow. But I saw the Ministry Secretary, George Valentine. He was a fifth grader. And when I said what my unit was, I said, well, I was attached to second fifth grader. Ah, well done. We got new men, yes, so. Not many Gurkhas at all. Karens, you name it, a mixture of people. So he said, okay, we better get them all organized. Food was laid on for them, they were put into sort of bivouacs, and I was there for, we're now getting to the 15th, 16th of May. And whereas I thought we'd arrived in India, having come to Imphal, I found we had a march of another 90 miles to this railhead, Dimapur Road. So we gave ourselves 3 days rest, and then pressed on, and we got to Dimapur Road on the 20th of May. Where there was a railhead, arrangements were being made to send troops into India. There was an officer's shop of some sort, or re-kitting supply depot, field cashier, everything was going. They seemed to have got some sort of organization going there, except that the trains were being held up on sidings for days on end because they didn't have enough rolling stock to get these things away. So, having got some fresh shorts and shirts and whatever, and then got the men in the cattle wagons. Preparatory to being railed down to a place called Gauhati on the Brahmaputra, which was from where we crossed over the Brahmaputra by ferry to get to Calcutta. I was able to write to my parents. All I knew was my parents banked with Lloyds Bank in Rangoon in Burma. So I wrote them a letter in pencil. I've still got the envelope to say I'd come out ahead, and all was well. So many people have died. But however, I'll give you all the news when I come. And I addressed it to H.L. Sapping Esquire, my father's initial, here at Lloyds Bank, Calcutta. Do you know that never got to them? My father, in the meantime, had gone to Allahabad, because he was then recalled to military service. And he was the garrison engineer there. So from there we go down to Gauhati. We were put into an officer's camp. That was even better than the bamboo slums that we had at that CCS. Our flooring was brick, uneven brick. Nothing on top of it. We were supposed to sleep on the brick. monsoon was in full swing, I managed to, between the Audley and myself, I managed to scrounge a camp bed, which at least got me off the ground. There were several of us there, and a lot of them were looking forward to going up to Shillong, about 18 miles up in the hills, where there was a nice rest camp there. There was also a battalion of the 8th Gurkhas, and I thought, well, I'll go and rest up with the 8th Gurkhas. Anyway, that didn't last too long. It must have been about 21st. By the time I got to Guwahati, it was about the 25th of May. A chap turned up one day, introduced himself as Lieutenant Chris McDowell. He was in the Tokhine Battalion of the Burma Frontier Force. He was attached to the sub-area of a place called Johat, which was 18 miles up the road. He'd been given instructions to collect me to report to the sub-area. So I said, what's it all about? And he said, I don't really know, but they do want your services. I go along, I meet a chap called Brigadier Jarrett, I said, remember. Knight, you have been posted to 109 Indian Infantry Brigade at Dibrugarh. I said, well, what is that? He said, well, it's further up the Brahmaputra, it's a brigade headquarters there. I was then about 7 stone in weight, having been normally 11 stone, because I'd literally starved. A lot of us came out very thin. So I said, well, he said, well, are you contemplating leave? And I said, well, he said, it's a rather important job. And I said, well, if that is the case, yes, fine, I'll forego leave. So the next thing I was driven up to Dibrugarh by the said Chris McDowell in the Jeep. And whatever kit I was able to get with my colonel over there, I went up, reported to 109 in the brigade. I was then given accommodation in a big tented camp, very nice, beautiful big EPIP tent with a lounge, dinner tent, with a fridge, a lot. I was like a little king there. I had a section of Jats. The Jats now come from Delhi, they're Hindus, from the 9th Jats, Jamadar Sahib and Turn then. And my boss was a chap called Major Jack McFarlane, who was based at 109 Infantry Brigade. He contacted me as soon as I got to the camp. He turned out to be an ex-Shanghai policeman, a fluent Chinese speaker. He was absolutely marvelous with me. He was so concerned in the state I was in. And yet, when I found out exactly how he got to India, he'd come through a very difficult way as well. He came through northern Burma, right through the Hupong Valley, the famous Hupong Valley. But Jack was an absolutely marvelous boss. The idea was that a lot of troops were coming through, not regular troops, mainly military policemen, and Gurkhas and Indians in the Burma Frontier Force, were coming through the Hupong Valley into northern Assam, to a place called Tinsukia. They were being followed by GIFs. Have you ever heard the term GIFs? These were Japanese infiltrated Indian troops and who were trying to undermine loyalty and all the rest of it. And the information was that they were coming into these camps like refugees. In fact, they were refugees and stirring up trouble. Because at that stage, you see, Mr. Gandhi and his many men, with the Japs having chucked out the Burma army, and nobody left the Burma army, they thought they would parley with the Japs to come into India and get rid of the British for them, you see. Anyway, with that in mind, Jack said, now look, I want you to keep your eyes real open, and if you see anything that goes wrong, just let me know. So I got all of all the girls who were in the camp with their families and what they do, and said, now look, if you approach by anybody, try and find out who he is, which tent he lives in, what he looks like, and I want you to let me know. So I built up a little intelligence ring on that camp. There must have been about 200 people there, and I was in control of them. I must say that I think my responsibilities were taken off the really, because I never worried about their food or rations or anything. That was done with the check. I merely sat in the camp, fattened myself up with some decent food, dealt with loads. These people were being vetted. I had to do a certain amount of vetting. And then after they were vetted, they were then lorried to Dibrugarh and then sent down towards Calcutta. And I think they were being dispersed to various regimental centres that the Indian Army had arranged with the Burma Army. I don't know where it was then. But in that process, I caught out a very important chap called Jamadas Sohan Singh. Now, he was Subhas Chandra's boss, almost sort of one of his closest minions. The three chaps who were court-martialed after the war, and of course we couldn't take it any further. There were three fellows I knew. One was a chap from the Baluch regiment, and they could, if he was still in India, could have been executed. But Sohan Singh, he was very interested. He helped me an awful lot. I thought he was a wonderful guy. But all he was trying to do was get him to buy good books and quietly move around the camp. Then as a result of picking up Sohan Singh, we picked up another 10. Now, when we got somebody like Sohan Singh and these other men, and we suspected that they were subversives, they were then sent down to another camp just north of Guwahati on the Brahmaputra River bank, which was a forward interrogation centre run by two Burma police officers, one called Neville Hill and the other chap called Toby Ford. And then there was an Indian deputy superintendent, a chap called Putnam. They were then thoroughly interrogated, and then from there they were disposed of. Now, while I was on that camp, two chaps suddenly appeared, both majors. I don't know whether they cleared this with Jack McFarlane, who was my immediate boss, but they both turned up. One of the chaps called Brown, Albert Brown, and another chap called Jeff Palmer. Brown was in the Burma Forest Service, and this chap Palmer, I think, was in one of the timber farms. I was very well accommodated there. I had easy chairs and carpets, and I was always able to entertain anybody. They came along and said, my car line settled, and I said, yes. And John Albert Brown said, I'm a good friend of your father Henry. Said, oh, how nice, how nice. What brings you here? And they said, well, we happen to be in Dibrugarh, and we were in the mess there, and somebody mentioned your name. And they said, oh, is he around? And they said, yes, he's up. He's got his own set up there, about 6 miles away, on the road to Dinjan, the big American airfield. I said, oh, yeah, fine. So, yeah, come on. Have you had any lunch? Not yet. And I said, well, it's lunch ready. Entertained them. It got a bit late. I said, well, there's plenty of accommodation here. Come stay for dinner. They're talking about all sorts of things. And they stayed the night. The next morning, thank you very much. I see that sort of you built up a little bit of an. I told them that, you know, really, I didn't know exactly what my job was, but I said I was brought there because I smoked Burmese and Hindustan Urdu fluently. I said that was the principal idea, but at the same time, I built up a little network here because these gyps are being, supposed to be coming through. And we caught 10 chaps, one particularly important man. Yes, fine. And so they departed. Well, I did the job there. I know that the military secretary at Johat and the Brigadier said, well, I was only here for a couple of months. Give me a chance to get fit, which I in the end, I thought was a very good deal. I put on weight, I was back to about 11 stone. I've been fed very well by these chaps. And Jack, very nicely, by which the big American Air Force had arrived at Dinjan, they were operating against Burma. And I got very friendly with Colonel Boatner, who became General Boatner of Korea fame. He and MacArthur got the sack at the same time. I think it was out of Korea or Formosa. Truman sacked the two. Well, Boatner was the colonel there. And they flew me By which time I'd got contact with my parents, and my father was in Allahabad. And I had a nice plane trip in a fine fortress, and they flew me to Allahabad with whatever kid I had. I was going to 3 weeks leave. I went up to a place called Nanitol from Allahabad. After a week, my wife was then at the Jesus Training College there. We were engaged, met her. And then at the end of my leave, which was October, I was given orders to report to the 3rd Gurkha Regimental Centre at Almora, which is down the hill.
Just before you go any further, can I just go back to Sohan Singh? Yes. How was it that you discovered that he was trying to pull the wool over your eyes?
Well, in hindsight, afterwards, he was so helpful. He was coming along and saying, oh, this man is sick, sir, and that man is sick. I think what we later learned he was doing was gaining the confidence of the people on the camp to say that, look, whatever that officer doesn't do for you, I will see that he does it for you. In that way, gaining their confidence, in that way, hoping that they would turn around and say, we don't want a British, we want to join the Indian National Army. This was the way he operated. He didn't sort of have, unlike somebody else, he didn't sort of keep in the background, he was very much in the foreground.
Did he eventually confess to having been recruited by the Japanese?
But that was not when he was with me. He went down to the Forward Interrogation Center, as I told you, and in a little camp north of Guwahati, where these three police officers there, they did all the very detailed interrogation. I think, in fact, that was only a Forward Interrogation Center. From there, he was sent on somewhere else. But he was certainly convicted as an army. He was a proper Jemadar, Indian VCO, from the Burma Army Service Corps. And I think he was jailed, 7 years, 10 years.
Sorry, I interrupted you with the account.
So anyway, I report to 3rd Gurkha at Almora after my leave. There's some confusion there. I shouldn't have gone there, but I should have gone to the 5th Royal Gurkha Rifles Regimental Centre at Abbottabad in the northwest frontier.
Which was your own regiment.
That's right. But I'd never been there, you see. But yeah, I was posted. And I said, why am I going to the 5th Royal Gurkha Regimental Centre? He said, oh, well, you were permanently transferred because the Burma Rifles were disbanded in March. So you're on permanent attachment to the 5th Royal Gurkha. And of course, my kinsman, Ronnie Cameron, who was by that time a brigadier, made sure that I was on the books of the 5th Royal Gurkha Rifles because they wanted me back, you see. Anyway, so I hung on at Almora. The depot commander there, George Lutie, said, look, you can hang on in Nanitol. I said, my girlfriend's up there. He said, well, if I just stay there, go back to Nanitol. It's only a short ride up the hill there. Hang on there till we get further instructions. Anyway, further instructions came, passed it on to the station staff officer, Nanitol. I was not to report to 5th Regimental Centre, but to report to the German Army headquarters at Hoshiarpur in the Punjab. All right. So I get to Hoshiarpur in the Punjab. I'm posted to the 3rd Burma Regiment, made mainly of Gurkhas, under a very nice seal, Lieutenant Colonel Leslie Lintott, another friend of my father. He then appoints me a company commander with the rank of captain. He knew my father and I were great polar players, and so was he. So we start up a hunt club there.
Is this 42 or 43?
42, October. October, at the end of my leave, October 42.
The 3rd Burma Regiment.
Hmm. See, they confused it with 3rd Gurkha. It was, the signal said 3BR, which they read for 3GR. See, and in the military signal, they wouldn't put Gurkha Rifles, they said 3GR. In fact, all the Burma Rifle Battalion became Barif, V-U-R-I-F. But the Gurkhas didn't become Gurif. So the signal got sort of mixed up a bit at Almora. When in fact, when I left back to Nainital, Luti said, look, we're looking at this again. It says 3BR. And we found out that 3BR is at a place called Hoshiarpur in the Punjab. Okay, so I get to Lingard. He then says, great, let's get up. We start a hunt club, we go get hog spears, I go to Amritsar, we buy some more horses. I bought two horses myself. All nicely settled, and all of a sudden the signal says, I've got a report to GHQ Delhi. GSI, GHQ Delhi, General Service in Baggage Intelligence, GHQ Delhi. Can't understand this at all. Anyway, Lintop said, well, you better go. Keep all the kids here. See what happens. I go to Delhi, and I report to Baroda House. The Maharaja of Baroda's city mansion. Eh? Six officers in the mess. The accommodation is like Buckingham Palace. Can't dress like that in Delhi, old boy. You've got to get some decent uniform and whatever. Oh, yeah, fine. I'd like a staff guy to take me shopping. Collar, please. Haven't got any money. Oh, that's all right. How much do you want? I said, I want nothing for my officer's pay book. No, don't worry. Go get yourself kitted out. I said, okay, fine. There's a chap called Martin. He's the chief signals chap there, Major Martin. He's the only chap I knew by name. Fellas were floating in and out. Colonel arrives, chap called Campbell arrives in the room. And he says, hello, boy, nice to meet you. Name's Chuck Campbell or something. And Carl Seppings. Is this Carlisle Seppings? Yeah. Oh, fine, we did a hell of a lot of abuses. Well, what's happening? Oh, don't worry about it. You take a bit of rest. Go shopping. Just bring up for a car. Go shopping. Of course, I get into some very nice uniforms. But this is a life. I don't want to go to the Burma Regiment and become a regimental officer. This is a staff job. Very nice. Beautiful meals, servants, mess servants, car to use. Oh, this is really, really good. I really landed on something. Yeah, not for long. 1 week later, Cameron says, I'm sending a car for you coming up to GHQ. That's Vice Regal Lodge, eh? General headquarters in there. I want you to meet a couple of chaps. Okay, not there. Cameron's there and he says, we'll be up. Go in there, with two fellows in civics. Morning. Yes. Hello there. How are you enjoying yourself? Oh, fine. Now, we are from a certain organization that does long-range penetration. Oh, yeah. Didn't give me their names at all. Yeah, nice to know, you know, that sort of thing. You prepared to go back into Burma? So I said, well, I suppose in due course we'll all go back to Burma. No, this is immediately. I said, how the hell can I go back there? It's full of Japs. And how do we expect me to get back? Oh, well, we'll parachute you in. I said, come on. I don't go for this sort of thing. Look, I've just come out of the bloody place, eh? I don't want to go back there again for a long time. No, it won't be so soon, anyway. Anyway, they talk about it. It's an organization that's directly under Churchill and all this. And I said, well, we've got a long shot, boy. I want to go quietly back to the 3rd Burma Regiment. I just bought a couple of horses. Anyway, not to worry. We'll see you for dinner tonight. I said, where's this damn great hotel in Connaught Place? Oh, I said to Campbell, well, where's this dinner tonight? He said, it's at the name of the place. Oh, something hotel. my man, he said, well, darling. So we all go to dinner, these two guys and everything. Don't tell me who they are. And you have a lot of experience about them. I said, no, not really. I said, oh, yeah, but I was only a university student then. But he said, you took a group of soldiers over some mountains that had never, never been explored before. So what was that? He said, from that elephant then. I said, there were no tracks at all. He said, yeah. But if you can shift X number of people, I said, no, it would not lock a lot of people. Maybe about 25. If you can shift and pioneer place to like that, you're going to do very much more. What about your Burmese? And I said, well, it's not all that good, you know. And I said, I couldn't pass off as a pure Burmese. In any case, I'm too bloody tall for a Burmese anyway. Too fair one to start off with as well. Anyway. Think it over. No, enjoy yourself about it. Having a drink and whatever. I go back, and the last parting shot, who I believe, and I wouldn't swear it was him, it was Colin McKenzie from SOE. I was told it was Colin McKenzie. I was told that the other chap was Peter Sterling, David Sterling's brother.
Well, Colin McKenzie had one leg.
That's right. That's right. He was limping, and it was bloody well, and I asked. They wouldn't tell me that at all. Because you see, I was going to be used as a potential agent, the fewer people I knew, the better. You see. So, anyway, his parting shot to me was, go and take yourself a fortnight's leave. I said, just come off leave. Go on, have another fortnight's leave. Go and see the bright lights of Bombay or something. I said, yeah, I'll think about it. Anyway, get back to the mess. Campbell said, next morning breakfast, you serious about me to Bombay? And I said, I've forgotten all about it. Go on, Shovel. I said, I got no bloody money. He said, no. Martin will give you, how much do you want? I said, I don't know. How much do I want to have a bloody good time in Bombay? Anyway, I drew 5,000 apiece and I said, I don't want it on my paybook, you know. I haven't got an awful lot on my paybook. I spend quite a lot on leave. No, not the money. So, took me down to the station, Campbell took me down, and he said, look, the drill is that once you're on leave, if you're prepared to do what those two chaps have asked you to do, just send a phone message to the SSO at General Headquarters, say the answer is yes. Okay, so I go to Bombay, Taj Mahal, beach candy, lots of birds around the place, and the rest of it. Because I'm engaged to my wife, so I live out from there. Half of mine jump on a train, but it's such a bloody trip across country, so I stayed in Bombay. And I don't know what took me, I was a bit too much one night, somewhere. I thought, the answer is yes. So before I could change my mind, I rang through to the GHQ that night, got hold of the duty officer, told him who I was, said, message for Colonel Campbell, answer is yes.